And now we would attempt something that, of course, cannot really be done, not definitively. Nonetheless, we will try and, in words and pictures, bring you a summation, an evaluation of the man who died today. John Fitzgerald Kennedy was sworn in as the nation's 35th president on January 20th, 1961, the first Roman Catholic ever to hold that office.
Washington, D.C., January 20th, 1961. Inauguration day of the 35th President of the United States, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, age 43.
Only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it.
That responsibility and its cares came thick and fast. But this was a festive day for Mr. Kennedy and his young wife. They had just had their second child, John Jr., and the president was not yet 44 years old. Experience in the House and the Senate were his preparation for the presidency. In a sense, though, his training had begun long, long years before he entered the House at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the youngest man ever elected president, the exponent of the new frontier, partisan of a new, young look at a tangled world. John Fitzgerald Kennedy was the second of nine children in the family of financier Joseph P. Kennedy. He was a lightweight, but he battled at football. He was schooled at Choate, then went to Princeton and Harvard. Before he finished college, he accompanied his father to England, where the elder Kennedy was appointed ambassador to the court of St. James. From this experience and his Harvard studies came his first book, published in 1940, Why England Slept, a study of the unpreparedness that helped lead to World War II. In that war, John Fitzgerald Kennedy commanded a PT boat in the Pacific. A Japanese destroyer rammed and sank it, but he kept his crew alive to be rescued after 5 days on a tiny island. His elder brother, Joseph Kennedy Jr., was not so lucky, killed in action over Germany. Joseph Kennedy Sr. had wanted his eldest son to be present. With his death, the task devolved on John Fitzgerald. The war set the stage for his political career. Mr. Kennedy's first battle in the political arena won him a congressional seat in 1947. From there, he moved on to the Senate, where he was one of the earliest to take the field against Teamster Czar James Hoffa. While he was campaigning for the Senate, he met Jacqueline Bouvier, who later became his wife. Their courtship and marriage were delayed because of the press of politics, but as soon as his public work permitted, they were married. The ceremony was performed on September 12, 1953, at St. Mary's Church in Newport, Rhode Island. The ceremony performed by the Most Reverend Richard Cushing, now Richard Carton Cushing. Their wedding was considered one of the year's social highlights. Back in the Senate, Mr. Kennedy was faced with another problem. A war-incurred back injury began to give him trouble. He entered Manhattan's hospital for special surgery in October 1954 and underwent a double fusion of spinal discs. After his recovery, Mrs. Kennedy said the day he threw away his crutches was one of the happiest in her life. Mr. Kennedy refused to let illness or his personal life interfere with his career. And in 1960, he went to the convention seeking nomination for the nation's highest office. The convention in Los Angeles was a knockdown, drag-out affair. Critics felt he was too young, that he lacked experience for the high office he sought. But his strategists overcame all opposition, and he was selected to face Richard Nixon in one of the nation's toughest elections. Mr. Kennedy was never one to duck a tough fight. When the campaign started, he came out full strength with a demand that Nixon debate with him on the key issues of the day. His opponent agreed, and they met in political combat in the world's first televised debate between two presidential candidates. There are some who say these televised meetings gave Mr. Kennedy the edge. There were no holes barred in the campaign that followed. Cuba and other key issues of the day occupied most of the interest. At no time was there any doubt that the election would be one of the closest in the nation's history. This was borne out on election day when the voters began going to the polls. Mr. Kennedy and members of his family waited out the election at Hyannisport in Massachusetts while the voters decided whether they wanted to continue the policies of President Eisenhower by electing his vice president or change the administration by sending a Democrat to the White House, the nation's first Roman Catholic president. The returns seesawed, first giving the edge to one side and then to the other. When there seemed to be no doubt that Mr. Kennedy had been elected president, he made this brief statement.
Every degree of mind and spirit that I possess will be devoted to the long-range interests of the United States and to the cause of freedom around the world. So now my wife and I prepare for a new administration and for a new baby. Thank you.
One of President Kennedy's gravest problems in foreign affairs, and the one that brought the closest confrontation with Soviet Premier Khrushchev, was Cuba. Early in September of 1962, the president warned that Premier Castro's military strength had been bolstered by deliveries of Soviet equipment. The warnings were repeated. On October 22nd, the president cut short a Western campaign trip to make an 18-minute television speech of national urgency. He told the nation a series of offensive missile sites were in preparation in Cuba, and that he had ordered a naval and air arms quarantine of the island. Within the next 10 days, and under the threat of nuclear war, developments were fast. The quarantine was imposed. A Soviet ship stopped and searched. Finally, Khrushchev agreed to dismantle the bases under UN inspection. And on November 2nd, the president reported that Soviet missile bases were being dismantled. As the focal point of international interest and tension drifted away from that little island in the Caribbean, President Kennedy still faced a number of major international problems, including those with our Western allies. The government of Britain's Prime Minister Macmillan, a staunch ally, was on the wane, and America's traditional friendship with France, although kept up on the surface, was gradually being strained, with President de Gaulle stubbornly clinging to an almost go-it-alone role, seeking to become an independent nuclear power. The NATO alliance itself was at a turning point as military and government officials tried to reshape it to meet the ever-changing prospects of war and defense. Russia's Khrushchev picked away at America's proposal to form a multinational nuclear fleet as part of the NATO alliance. However, despite the persistent problems, the United States and the Soviet Union were able to reach a dramatic agreement, a limited nuclear test ban treaty hailed by the world as a major step toward eliminating thermonuclear war, and certainly a high point in the foreign affairs of President Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy, who sailed from his youth, made boating a chief relaxation. And with Mrs. Kennedy, he made festivities at last year's America's Cup race in Newport a very special occasion. The dinner was given by the Australian ambassador at the Breakers, one of the most famous mansions in Newport. The demands of state heavily curtailed the president's family life. There were times when formal occasions like this one had to provide the rare moments of relaxation with the First Lady. But the president and Mrs. Kennedy hoped for a normal life with 6-year-old Caroline and 3-year-old brother John. Last August, when the Kennedys were vacationing at Hyannisport, the First Lady gave birth to a boy. Tragically, John Bouvier Kennedy lived only a few days. But there were many happy days in Hyannisport where the president and his wife shared all their spare summer moments with the children. There was sailing and horseback riding and quiet private moments. On the domestic front, civil rights was Mr. Kennedy's greatest problem. Long smoldering Negro resentment flared to impatience. It helped the presidency but plagued Mr. Kennedy's every move in domestic policies. At one time, he made a direct appeal, such as this on Albany, Georgia.
Let me say that I find it wholly inexplicable why the city council of Albany will not sit down with the citizens of Albany, maybe Negroes, and attempt to secure to them in a peaceful way their rights. The United States government is involved in sitting down at Geneva with the Soviet Union. I can't understand why the government of Albany, city council of Albany, cannot do the same for American citizens.
Birmingham made the biggest headlines and gave Mr. Kennedy his biggest problems. Water hoses became a symbol of the passions aroused by the civil rights movement. Many of these passions were directed against Mr. Kennedy, and they were echoed in the Congress, where the president's support for equal rights and his far-reaching civil rights bill created a solid block of opposition to many of his other programs. Even the historic August March on Washington, to which Mr. Kennedy gave his blessing, failed to break the congressional logjam. And at what turned out to be his final news conference, Mr. Kennedy conceded that his civil rights bill would not pass this year. And And thus it was, while in the midst of a whirlpool of staggering problems, as he faced the challenges ahead with the optimism of youth, as he braced for the 1964 presidential campaign, the vigorous administration of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy has come to a tragic end with his assassination in Dallas this afternoon, leaving behind a record of 2 years, 10 months, and 2 days in the White House. At his inauguration, that chilly, breezy day in January 1961, President Kennedy spoke these words, which will be indelibly etched in millions of American hearts.
So, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.